This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Extreme poverty is on the rise in the United States. 6 million people survive with food stamps as their only income. There was a hope that things would improve as we recovered from the recession. But while business is business as usual, income inequality is only getting worse. The trend that began in the 1980s with the rich getting richer and poor poorer is in fact accelerating. Peter Edelman has spent his life advocating for federal programs to combat poverty. He worked on the Senate staff of Robert F. Kennedy and in the Clinton administration. He's currently Associate Dean of the Georgetown Law Center, and he recently wrote a book called So Rich, So Poor, Why It's So Hard to End Poverty in America. And he joins us today to talk about the deep roots of deep poverty. Welcome. Good to have you here, Peter Edelman.
Thank you very much, Frank. It's wonderful to be here.
What are we talking about when we say deep poverty?
We're talking about people who have incomes below half the poverty line. So that's below about $9,000 for a family of three. And we've seen this astonishing increase in the number of people who are in that terrible situation. Now 20 million people. That's just doubled. The percentage of people in that fix has doubled over the last almost 40 years. It's a terrible problem.
When you say that doubled over the past 40 years, so that's important to point out. We're not talking about people who were thrown out or pushed down just as a result of this last recession or depression.
That's right, although it's gotten a lot worse in the last since 2000. There were 12.6 million people in 2000, 20.5 million in 2010. So there's been a big increase. And that has a lot to do with what's happened to the safety net at the very bottom. It used to be in all states that people could get both food stamps and that we're talking about mothers and children here and what we called welfare. Now it's called temporary assistance to needy families. And that's gone. That's largely gone. In 25 states, less than 20% of poor kids get help under that program. So we end up with 6 million people whose only income is from food stamps.
A lot of that changed in 1996. You were Assistant Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare under the Clinton administration. And Bill Clinton touted with bipartisan support the end of welfare as we know it. This was the Welfare Reform Act that was designed to get people off the welfare rolls and back into the job market. At the time, you and others, and you, in fact, resigned as a result of, of his support for that legislation.
Well, we need to have a decent safety net, and we're talking, as I said, about mothers and children. The heart of what we want to do about poverty is about jobs. But for people who aren't working, there has to be the safety net, and the 1996 law just blew a huge hole in it.
Interestingly enough, at the peak of what was one of the most robust increases in productivity and economic upswings in American history, it didn't look that bad. In fact, doomsayers like you looked pretty bad in the immediate aftermath of that. All of the projections of how bad it was going to be for the poorest of the poor never came to be.
My wife and I got to be kind of a talking point in the Republican rendering of all of this, along with Senator Moynihan, that we had talked about there would be people homeless, many more people homeless and so on. And for the first 4 years under the law, we were in part wrong. There were plenty of people who got pushed off of welfare and didn't have a job. So it wasn't even true then that it was this marvelous thing for everybody. Right. But in the year 2000, starting then until now, we began to see the real outcome. And it's just disappeared to the point where you had 68% of poor kids in the mid-90s who were getting mom and they were getting help. It's down to 27% nationally now. So it's really almost off the table in about half our states.
And that's because states have had the right to decide what to do with the block grants that they've gotten from the federal. The money didn't exactly go away. It just was restructured. States had a lot more authority.
Absolutely. States always had the authority to set the level of benefits, and certainly many were not generous. Mississippi paid at 11% of the poverty line. But people had a legal right to go to the office, to the welfare office, and get help at the sometimes low levels. They don't anymore. There's no legal right. So in the recession that we're, in human terms, still going through, People went to the office and they asked for food stamps and they got them. And so we went from 26 million to 46 million people, really quite surprising, on food stamps. And it works for a safety net. Welfare, it went from 3.9 million to 4.4 million. And a lot of states cut the benefits and pushed people off the rolls.
Some of those people got jobs, but now, of course, they're out of work.
That's right. So if the point was we don't want to help you because you're healthy and you could find a job, if there's a job out there, okay. In the middle of a recession, they were still telling people in a lot of states to go show that they had been turned down at 30 places, and then they could come back and ask.
So what's the effect of that? What does that mean for people whose only income is food stamps? Because it's the only program left that if you're entitled, you will get it.
It's terrible. We're talking about moms and kids here. And what happens, of course, is that they're shunted from pillar to post. They don't have a regular place to live. They stay on somebody's couch. That's not permanent. They move on to another place. They move in with somebody they shouldn't. They end up doing things that are illegal, maybe hooking up a utility line from the next door, because the food stamps are a third of the poverty line, $6,000 for a family of three, and that's all they have. And the cost, the effect on children is just terrible. I mean, think about it's terrifying for them.
Well, I think that's one of the important things you point out in the book is how many generations this will continue with people living in poverty, no hope of sending their children to college. And, of course, the correlation between education and wealth is pretty well known.
Our democracy is really at stake here, Frank, I think, because if we have so many people who are not participants, not included in our society, and then so many people at the other end who have so much wealth and power, we're not the democracy that we started out to be.
You know, it's interesting. You talked about you being the talking point in the aftermath of the Welfare Reform Act. All of the things you predicted didn't happen then. They're happening now. They didn't happen then. Ron Haskins was one of the co-authors of the bill. He was actually a staffer at the time. He's now at Brookings Institute. He was here, and he's gone around the country saying, yeah, he thinks it did a lot of good. He still thinks it's a great piece of legislation, but he now acknowledges that they didn't take care of people at the very bottom and didn't anticipate that this very thing would happen when times got bad.
Yes, I'm glad Ron says that. I know that he does. He talks about the number of women who got jobs. It did go from 49% of moms with children, single moms with children, up to 64%. Between 1996 and 2000, but it's gone back down to 54%. So we're almost back to where we started. It's really part of a larger problem in our labor market where there's so many low-wage jobs, and if you're a mom by yourself under those circumstances, it's really hard to get out of poverty, or certainly hard to support a family on just the one job because the jobs pay so little.
Half of all jobs, you say, pay less than $34,000 a year.
Yes. That's kind of a surprise.
And a quarter pay less than the poverty level for
yes.
a family of four.
Yes, and the wage has been absolutely stuck for 40 years. It's not that the economy has been stuck. The rich made out, one might say, like bandits. But at the bottom, those jobs have increased by only 7%. The wages increased by only 7%, taking inflation into account, a fifth of a percent a year. We need to understand that we're becoming a low-wage nation.
So what's the answer? Are we talking about going back to transfer payments where we just tax the wealthy and create programs and give money to people at the very bottom? Is that
no,
the answer?
No. I think that what we want is major emphasis on work. If the work doesn't pay enough and the minimum wage is raised, and it should be to about $10 an hour and indexed, and then we have the income equivalence of having health care and having help with housing. Help with housing reaches only one out of four people who need it. Child care for people who are working. These have money equivalents, Pell Grants to go to college. But then we get to the earned income tax credit. You have to be working to get that. But the heart of what we do, even if we're going to have too many low-wage jobs, which I fear we are for a long time to come, is the job and the wage, and then adding to the wage with public policy so people have enough of an income. Transfer payments in the sense of somebody who's not working, we want that to be a very small number of people who are mostly in transition, and then there may be a small number. Right now, as far as TANF, welfare, is concerned, only 1.5% of the people in the country get cash assistance. So we don't want to rely on that too much, but we do have to have a safety net.
You've been thinking about this a long time, worked on the Senate staff of Robert Kennedy. What have you learned about alleviating policy over those decades in this country?
I think we've learned that we need to tackle things in a very, very holistic way. Certainly, jobs are at the heart of it. Income is at the heart of it. But when you get down to the local level, so much of poverty relates to the place where people live, neighborhoods where there are too many poor people, rural areas where there are too many people. Federal policy can help with that, but really there needs to be community leadership, civic leadership, responsibility within communities, responsibility from the faith community, people themselves taking responsibility. I think that we've had too much of a accusing back and forth where the conservatives say, oh, it's about personal responsibility. That's the whole story. The liberals say it's all structural. We need to say it's both.
Peter Edelman, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Peter Edelman's new book, So Rich, So Poor, Why It Is So Hard to End Poverty in America. Just ahead, the story of a religious epiphany during a soldier's time at war. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.